on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, a new week begins, hot diggity dog. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, your home for what we like to call conversation radio. Available at headonradionetwork.com and our listen live button. We are also available on a wide variety of streaming platforms, places like TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Internet Radio, both of which are available as apps for your smartphone, Android or iPhone devices, and they're even free. But if you get the one that you can pay for there for the TuneIn app, it also, as I understand it, records. So there's that. Then there's Streama.com, Roku devices, Dar.fm, all of which you can use to find The Horn stream. And tickled we will be, all of us, if you do so, because we're always happy to add new members to the Horn family, or, for Philip, the Horn commune. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. The podcast address for this program is at whiterosesociety.org, under the subdomain for Head On with Bob Kincaid. And you can also get the podcast at iTunes. So here we are. It's Monday. Dr. Bill went an hour early today because he had a board meeting this evening. He went from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. For those of you who are following him via the Dropbox, you can get the show there now. Just don't delete it. Let it stay in the Dropbox for other people who want it as well. And thanks to all the people who have written to ask for invitations to the Horn Dropbox. It's a really handy little way to make sure that you can get the show file if you can't listen live, as well as getting Dr. Bill's show until such time as we get the archive put up in the RSS or ABC or JQM or whatever feed for the podcast set up over at White Rose Society. Ben Birch is a very, very busy man who yet, for lo and behold, these more than 10 years has helped keep progressive content available via the Internet and via whiterosesociety.org. And in all those 10 years, he has never, ever, ever sent a bill. Ben Birch is an under-celebrated progressive hero. So here we are. It's Monday. We begin a new week. Oh, by the way, for anybody else who wants to get added to the Dropbox, just send me an email saying, Bob, send me an invite to the Dropbox. I hope I haven't missed anybody. If I have, send me another email and say, you know, hey, Bob, you missed me. So, yeah, please, and thank you. And thank you very much for contributions that have come in over the weekend after Robert's challenge. Thank you very, very much. And with that having been said, I will also note that it's another broadcast night, and therefore another evening in which we try to raise $150 to keep this little experiment. Granted, it's been going on for quite some time now, but it's still an experiment in independent, people-driven broadcasting. We'll be trying to raise $150 this evening, and that in any combination you so choose. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. As is the snail mail address, but just for those of you who don't want to go and look, the snail mail address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower, E-I-S-E-N-H-O-W-E-R, Drive, P-M-B, personal mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. If you're sending a money order or a check, please don't make it payable to Bob Kincaid, because that makes Boss Man Wayne's life more complicated, being as how, well, just make them payable to the Horn, Head on Communications, something like that, please. And thank you very much, however it is that you respond, in order to keep all of this going. We are at the halfway, we're past the halfway mark for March, and so we've got about right at $1,600 yet to raise. And by the way, a reminder from Scott in Sweden, the Beat the Swede challenge is on for this month. If we manage to make the fundraising goal, Scott, the Swede who likes to be beaten, no, not like that, would like very much to kick in an extra $100 to make all of it, help us get ahead. So that's that part of the program. And we got through it fairly painlessly. But here we are, the 18th of March, 2013. And lo and behold, yes, it's, well, you know, it's that day of the week. Yeah, you know what I mean.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. No.
That's right, that's right. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up right over here to this little striped cybernetic tent. For less than 5 cents per hour of broadcasting, you can enter behind these thin cybernetic canvas walls and witness freak after freak after right-wing freak. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed. Hang on to your purses, ladies and men. Put your hand on your wallet and don't take it off. The Morans can get a little grabby from time to time. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. It's that shocking. Right-wing Morans from the journalistic variety, the political variety, the socially active conscience variety. Oh, my God. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits and Morans. And as an added bonus, it's not always right-wing Morans. Sometimes it's the credulous and not entirely and all the time too bright Morans who occupy the nomination spaces on any given evening. This is Moran Monday on the Horn. And we begin. Oh, by the way, Randy asking a question. He says, what is the monthly fundraising goal for the Horn? Well, the fact of the matter is, if you recall a note from, we had established it at $2,500, but it was our buddy Tom who wrote in a month or so back and said, you know, you're really getting this wrong, Bob. You need to be raising $150 a night, and it really needs to be three. So we can try to build in some kind of a cushion. So that's the goal. And so we are around about $1,400, I think. But anyway, it is Moran Monday nomination time. Let's start with the TV, shall we? Yesterday was just another Sunday night that I didn't watch the Bible. Oh, yeah, no, I don't mean the Book of Myths. I mean the really, really bad, bad, oh my God, I can't believe it's this bad television series about the Book of Myths. The devil showed up. Yeah, he did. I guess that both the History Channel, which has no history on it whatsoever, and what's-his-face, Mark Burnett, who brought us Survivor. Yeah, sure, he'll do a great job with a show about the Bible.
And then they did force, and then they did force the prophet Isaiah to eat a spider. No, no. I didn't watch it. I'm glad I didn't. And, well, for a variety of reasons. Like I mentioned, Moses is a shaven-headed drag queen with too much eye makeup on him when he's still busy being an Egyptian prince. One of the angels who wipes out Sodom is a double katana wielding ninja with a vague resemblance to Mr. Sulu in that one Star Trek episode where he went all martial artsy. Oh yeah, yeah. But the very best. Well, I'm taking this straight from a headline at a website called Black Youth Project. Jesus is white and Obama is the devil in the History Channel Bible. Really. The devil, who of course is wearing his black Sith hood, looks like Barack Obama about 15 years from now. Aged up a little bit, but it's unmistakably Obama. Completely at that, by accident. Never mind that Mark Burnett, that is his name, isn't it, said that he was, he felt called to make this. Now, when you say that, that's Christian code for Jesus told me to. But I'm guessing the call did not come from Jesus' area code now, was it? I mean, honestly. Barack Obama. This is not the Barack Obama Defense Network, okay? But really? What is this? Payback for, was it Game of Thrones? Was it the first season of Game of Thrones where they put George W. Bush's head on a pike in one of the gorier post-massacre scenes? I guess this is paying. I'll just make that one the devil. Yeah. At this blog post from Black Youth Project, I love this quote. Dr. Will Gaffney, Associate Professor of Hebrew and Old Testament at the Lutheran Theological Seminary in Philadelphia, has an article, and she breaks down and the name of it is What the History Channel is Getting Wrong About the Bible. I do love this quote. Not quite everything, just geography, anthropology, archaeology, biblical studies, theology, race, and ethnicity. Not all of them all of the time, but most of them, most of the time. The History Channel is engaging in a systematic whitewashing of the Bible. And we do mean white. Its characters and narratives, with a few telling exceptions. Samson. Yeah, big, violent black man with dreads. And this matters because of the way that race functions historically in the West, in the United States, and in the Church, and how the construction of race in modernity is shaped by, in, and in response to the scriptures. Jesus is, once again, a white dude. I realize that the History Channel is probably low-hanging fruit for Moran Monday, and God knows we've got other stuff. But I had to start with that. Really? Sith Lord Obama? Why not just give him little red bumps on the top of his head and have done with it? Darth Maul Obama. For heaven's sakes. Now, on to other nominees. Kind of hate to do this, but I just want to point out that we found out in the last couple of days that new progressive hero Senator Rand Paul, self-appointed libertarian ophthalmologist, has done gone out and introduced him some new law. You know, after his great big principled stand against drone attacks on... Oh, it wasn't a great big principled stand against drone attacks, was it? A great big principled stand against drone attacks in America. No, it wasn't exactly a great big principled stand against drone attacks in America either. His great big principled stand against drone attacks on right-wing fringe John Bircher militia groups. No, it wasn't even that either, was it? No. Oh, okay. Well, after Rand Paul's publicity stunt, in which he never had any intention whatsoever of even attempting to stop the nomination of John Brennan to be head of the CIA. You'll remember that a number of confused progressives fell madly in love with Rand Paul, who, incidentally, at CPAC and their little old straw poll, Rand Paul was the choice of CPAC for president in 2016. Nice. But I haven't. But he introduced himself a brand new law. You know, that's what legislators do, is introduce new laws. Here's his latest effort. Friday, Rand Paul introduced a fetal personhood bill. No, really. Why would anybody be surprised? He's jumped in on these things time after time after time. Randy Paul, fetus boy. The Life at Conception Act. It declares that human life begins at conception, as opposed to where everybody else seems to think it starts, including, you know, the Bible, first breath of life. Yes, his newly proposed law would give a fertilized egg. And I say, why stop at eggs? Why stop at fertilization? Any man in America, I mean, if we just, I mean, sperm is a potential life, right? We're all us guys, we're walking around with millions of them. I say we get the vote for our sperm. That'll teach them women folk to be getting all uppity and wanting a vote. I mean, they've only got a few hundred. We got millions! Right? Randy Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, declared, "The Life at Conception Act legislative declares what most Americans believe and what science has long known, except for the fact that science doesn't, that human life begins at the moment of conception and therefore is entitled to legal protection from that point forward. The right to life is guaranteed to all Americans in the Declaration of Independence, parenthetically, which has nothing to do with the law of the United States of America, and ensuring this is upheld and this is the constitutional duty of all members of Congress." Yeah. No word yet on whether or not Code Pink has delivered more flowers or chocolates to Senator Paul, or declared that he has large testicles like they did the last time. Wait a minute. He has large testicles, according to Code Pink. Maybe we don't necessarily want to be given the vote to sperm. He might just outvote us all. Manly man, that man. Jesus. I'm still stunned that any person allegedly calling themselves progressive, and I think of Code Pink, and I think of David Sirota, and who else? Glenn Greenwald. They all got all squishy and fluttery and just about had the vapors and had to use their fainting couches over Randy Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and his principled but not really stand against, but not really, John Brennan's nomination to run the CIA, but not really. It was a very effective fundraising tool, however. You know, it gives me no pleasure to criticize Code Pink in this context. Because I can't think of a time when I have not supported what they have done. When I have not spoken kindly, glowingly about them. But every now and then we screw up and we all of us do something incredibly stupid. And one would hope that our friends will say, hey, come here. Hey, that part where you got the vapors over Rand Paul, yeah, that was real dumb. Just between us, don't do it again, okay? Because Rand Paul would not care if a drone flew over and hell fired Medea Benjamin into nothing but a crispy little carboniferous spot in the pavement. You'd probably think she had it coming. Because he's a right-wing, authoritarian, unreconstructed fascist. He was merely playing to the weirdos in his party who are convinced that Environmental Protection Agency drones are going to fly over our mountaintop removal sites and try to intimidate the heroic coal workers. So we got Rand Paul out of the way, which is always a nice thing. But can't you almost hear the phone call back to, back to Armadillo Booger, Texas, where the Pappy Paul lives? Daddy, the CPAC people, they want me to be president. Yeah, they wanted me to be president too. But there's just not enough weirdos in this world, Randy. We gotta have more weirdos. Always working on that weirdo vote. So, let's see here. Sworn I sent this one out. Oh, well, going out now. Stand by. All right, Dan, your Dropbox invite is on the way to you. And I will man, this
is multitasking. I'm getting so good at it, I'm almost scared. Now, getting Randy Paul out of the way is always a good thing. Ron in Raleigh writes in, he says, let me get this straight. Any birth control method that doesn't allow the attachment of fertilized egg to the uterine wall would not only be outlawed, but would also be considered a murder weapon. I think that's a rather inescapable conclusion. Because them fertilized eggs, they's people. Of course, one of the things that's hard to explain to these right-wing horses' rear ends is that something approaching, and I will leave this to the experts, but I think this is what I read once upon a time, something approaching half of all human pregnancies end in what is called spontaneous abortion, where the body does the aborting without the help of a doctor or a priest or anyone to counsel the body not to, because, you know, maybe it just doesn't quite work out. Human body has ways of shutting half of those whole things down, you know what I mean? So I guess, I don't know, maybe we'll put some NASA technology to work and create a system whereby we can put fetal person monitors in all the toilets in the United States, because that's where half of all human pregnancies wind up. Really? Yeah. Survive St. Patty's Day, did we? Marty asks. Yes, yes, we did. I got to admit, we didn't do just a whole heck of a lot of celebrating around here. I feel about St. Patrick's Day the way perhaps some native peoples feel about Thanksgiving. It's sort of like, it's sort of like a celebration of a genocide. Because that is the history of St. Patrick's Day, to the extent that it's history and not absolutely myth. Patrick was British-born to Roman-cultured parents, and eventually got kidnapped by pirates, yar, and was kept in captivity, and eventually wandered his way to Ireland after a few years chasing the sheep, or goats maybe, I don't know. Decided God was talking to him. And St. Patrick's Day celebrates the destruction of pagan culture in Ireland. That's what all that business about chasing the snakes out of Ireland is. Because there were never any snakes in Ireland to begin with. But the snake was a potent symbol of pagan wisdom. So, whether they knew it or not, there were people all over the United States, and in fact all over the world yesterday, who were celebrating the deliberate, with malice aforethought, genocide of a culture. Begorra, huh? Brother. So that's what that is. Now, I'm expecting a call in a couple of minutes. We're going to be talking to a gentleman by the name of Melvin Buchholz. He's from up around Lac des Flambeaux in Wisconsin. Because we've got a More in Monday story from Northern Wisconsin. By way of background, I should probably tell you that you remember when we had Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins on the program a couple of weeks back? And he talked about what the mining industry has in store. For both the Bad River Band of the Lake Superior Ojibwe and everybody who lives in that magnificent area of northern Wisconsin. Well, the mining bill passed the Senate. It was authored by a guy named Tom Tiffany. And Tom Tiffany is a senator, a Republican senator. In the Wisconsin State Senate, Tom Tiffany introduced the bill. The Senate passed the bill. Then it went to the Assembly. The Assembly passed the bill. And last Monday, the guy that Charlie Pierce refers to as the goggle-eyed homunculus, Scott Walker, signed it into law and has been prattling ever since about how, by golly, if he has to start digging himself, we're going to get that mine started in the Pinokies. Tom Tiffany is a Moran Monday nominee tonight for Moran, Monday Moran. But this past weekend, the 16th, Saturday, there was a spearfishing tournament up at Lac des Flambeaux. And I wanted you to hear exactly what happened, what it was and what went down. It was a magnificent cultural expression. So, let me see if this is, Mr. Buchholz. Is that you, sir?
Yes, it is.
Well, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to talk about this with us. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
You work with the Lac des Flambeaux band?
No, I actually live and work for the Red Cliff tribe.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm an enrolled member of the Lac des Flambeaux tribe.
Okay, so tell us first of all about what the origin was for this spearfishing tournament.
Well, it started the way I had seen it is it was an honoring our treaty rights spearing tournament. It was basically set up because the state's given us a lot of backlash about our treaty rights. Tom Tiffany is trying to accuse us of basically depleting the resources and hurting the tourism. So we wanted to go out and show them that that's not what we're out there to do. We're out there to feed our families and carry on our traditions.
Well, and so just for those who don't necessarily know about what Anishinaabe traditions themselves are, is spearfishing something that goes back within the cultural tradition over the millennia?
Yeah, it goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. It's how we eat in the wintertime. You know, Lac des Flambeaux is one of the last Ojibwe tribes. I know LCO has a few guys. I believe Bad River might have a few. But, you know, just for instance, over the weekend, we had over 100 guys from Lac des Flambeaux out spearing the traditional way.
Well, can you tell us, it creates a mental image when I hear spearfishing. But can you tell us a little bit about what it actually entails?
Well, what we do is a long time ago they used to use sticks and balls. They'd put balsam balls down and they'd cover it up with animal hides and deer furs and stuff like that. So it's dark and you can see the muskies coming in. We carve all our own decoys out of balsam wood. Nowadays, a lot of guys have modernized to shacks. And basically you're sitting there waiting, hoping a muskie comes by, and we have our spears that we use to get them. They're heavier weighted spears. They're not the same as the spring spears that we use.
And do you get a pretty good yield out of it?
You know, honestly, no. there's been plenty of times where I've sat on the lake and I've sat there for 12 hours and haven't seen anything. Some days you can go out and you'll see, you know, 20 muskies. It's all basically chance, you know, luck.
So this is taking place on the ice. So you've got to auger through the ice And then you've got to, be able to see. And I guess I'm a little lost. My southernness is coming through.
Well, we use our auger and we drill three holes together, and then we chisel it out. Chisel the center of it out, so it's one big hole, roughly about, I'd say, 25 to 30 inches long, wide, around.
And the water's clean enough and clear enough you can see the fish when they move by?
Yeah, we typically only spear lakes where it's real clear to moderately clear. A lot of the cloudier lakes, you won't see anything.
Well, that's just amazing. I love the idea of honoring old cultural traditions like this. And yet, for some reason or another, is the muskie population thinned enough that it's something to worry about, that people who have been doing this for thousands of years should continue to have a right to do it?
I don't believe so. To me, it's not a very valid argument that our spearing is depleting the population. For instance, I don't have the numbers for Wisconsin, but as far as Lake Mille Lacs goes, for walleye, and it'd be the same for muskies. Over in Mille Lacs, the sports anglers last year were able to, their allotted harvest was 310,000 pounds of walleye. Out of that 310,000, the hook and line, the catch and release mortality rate was 136,000 pounds.
Wow.
So in the tribes, we take them and we eat them. They're throwing back fish that are going to die anyways.
And that's something a lot of people probably don't know, is that there is a mortality rate associated with fish that have been caught and released. A lot of people think of that as being this humane way of catching fish, but no, they go back into the water, and then they've been injured grievously enough, whether they were gill caught or mouth caught or whatever, that they die, right?
Yeah, and there was a study done out of Nipigon, Ontario, probably about 17, 18 years ago, where they had done a study on sport fishing and catch and release, and, a lot of things played into factor as far as, how deep the hooks were, how long the fish were out of water, how long the fight was to get them into the boat. And, it showed that there's high mortality rates.
And yet, and this is where, what we do here is on Mondays, we reserve Mondays for right-wing, idiots.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Tiffany is way up on the list this week, based on his remarks about the spearfishing tournament. Now, this is a guy who just sponsored a bill that will absolutely devastate the Pinoki Hills and ruin the watershed of the Bad River Band. And yet, if I understand correctly, he got all hot and bothered about your spearfishing tournament?
He basically is. They're looking for someone to put the blame on if the economy takes a hit in the Minocqua, Arborvitae, Woodruff area. And, and down in that area, Lac des Flambeaux was known for our fish. Whether it be walleye or muskie, and I guess he just needs somebody to blame besides himself and the rest of the crew with Governor Walker and them. It has just been introduced that Lac des Flambeaux is going to opt out of their agreement with the state for spring spearing. And what that does is it'll knock the sport angler's bag limit down to two, and that's, and then we have this muskie tournament, so it's really getting them quite heated in that area.
Well, it seems like he wants to have his cake and eat it, too.
Yeah, but, the way I see it is the economy is going to hurt one way or the other anyways. We're just somebody to blame. The amount of fish we take is nothing compared to what sport anglers take. I mean, our tribe, I think last year we took maybe 10,000 fish spearing. That's walleye, and the sport anglers, they're well over 100,000, and that's just estimated. Our harvests are monitored pretty regulated. Sport anglers, they don't have nobody regulating them.
And to be clear, for what tribal peoples do, what you catch, you eat. This is not sport.
No, it's not sport at all. A lot of the guys I know that we've all got real big families. A lot of the fish, deer meat, whatever it may be, rice goes to other families. They use it for ceremonies. You know, somebody were to pass away, they give fish and deer meat and rice and things like that to the family for their feast.
Well, as speaking as a white guy, I hope you'll understand what I say. I think that's just beautiful. I think revering culture is something that that this country is badly lacking in, largely because most people don't even have an idea of what their culture is in the first place. So what you're doing is a tremendous expression of the value of the continuity over time, the relationship to the people who lived their lives and struggled so that we can continue to live our lives and struggle so that there can be a future that lives their lives and continues to struggle. And by struggle, I don't mean something bad. I mean, that's the way it is. So the idea, you know, I saw the poster that you all put out for this. You know, it was a drug-free, alcohol-free event. You had some prizes that would have been really good prizes for people who are into fishing in the ice. And all taken all together, expressing this as a cultural heritage, a manifestation of cultural heritage, as opposed to someone who simply wants to blow up a mountain range for money. There's no comparison. Are there other elements of the wild or of nature where the Anishinaabe, the Ojibwe people, can manifest their treaty rights?
No, basically they're trying to take basically everything we've got. You know, and just to touch on this muskie tournament, a lot of people that, you know, when this flyer came out, a lot of people figured, oh, they're just going to kill all the fish. They're doing it for sport. I mean, I've seen articles where they were calling us Native American bounty killers and we're not doing it for the food. This event actually turned out to be more than just a spearing tournament. There was over 100 guys that showed up to spear. We speared 5 lakes. Out of them 100 guys and 5 lakes, we only took 14 muskies.
Oh, my heavens.
we met at our multi-purpose building in Lac du Flambeau, where Brooks Big John and Frank Mitchell, two of our council members, had organized this, and they had a big feast put on for us. We had an awards and honoring ceremony. We had our local youth drum group show up and sing some honor songs, some of our Ojibwe honor songs for us. Our tribal chairman, Tom Molson, showed up, and what they did was he called up all these guys, older guys, and honored them for their fight they did back 30 years ago with the treaty rights. You know, the original walleye warriors, these guys that fought for our treaty rights 30 years ago in the Minocqua area. It was a huge significance in our history. A lot of lessons were taught that Saturday. It was more than just fishing.
Well, I would imagine that it was. I mean, this is more than a couple of guys with as is so often the case, a hip flask of brandy going out on the ice. Having been present at an event at La Corderay last month, the drumming, the presence of the elders is all deeply, deeply powerful. And I trust that you all came away with a renewed sense of purpose.
Yeah, you get a huge sense of pride coming from a place like Lac du Flambeau, or whether it be LCO or Bad River, when something like that takes place. And when you got over 100 guys that have fought for treaty rights and are continuing to practice our ways these days because they fought for them, and they fought for us. I'm one of the younger guys, and they fought for me and my children to be able to continue practicing these. I mean, it was nothing but laughter and food, and just, you know, it was a real good time.
Well, Melvin Buchholz, I really appreciate what you did, and I appreciate you taking time to tell us about it. And our the goodwill of the Horn family and goes with you. And please pass along among the tribal peoples that they have allies that they don't even know they have, and that we stand behind you and we stand with you.
I'm glad to hear that. Thanks.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks for taking time out of your evening to tell us about
this. Thanks for asking me.
My pleasure. Bye now.
Yep.
Melvin Buchholz of the Lac du Flambeau, well, and the Red Cliff tribe. So, you know what this was. It wasn't a tournament in the purest sense, insofar as a tournament generally is geared toward a win-or-lose kind of approach. This was a full-on cultural celebration of a heritage that even in the 21st century, or perhaps especially in the 21st century, is under assault, under attack, in threat of outright elimination. Because, among other things, what this senator, Tom Tiffany, has done constitutes, in any part of the world of conscience, what Senator Tom Tiffany has done is nothing short of a groundbreaking on a new round of white crimes against Native humanity. And, well, the news story about this is just mind-boggling, because when we talk about white folks not having, and you know, I'm white folks, but I can at least acknowledge the issue. When we talk about white folks being clueless about their own privilege, well, here's the news story. The pull quote. Both Wisconsin DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp, she is, of course, a creature appointed by the goggle-eyed homunculus Scott Walker. God bless him, Charlie Pierce just has a way with words. Both Wisconsin DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp and 12th District State Senator Tom Tiffany, R. Hazelhurst, R. Idiot, expressed disappointment when they learned of the tournament. Really, they expressed disappointment when they heard that Native peoples were going to honor a tradition that went back, 10 millennia or so, thereabouts, in the ballpark. They expressed disappointment when they learned of the tournament.
We try to have a two-way communication with the tribe and work with them on issues, but at times it seems the communication is only one way, from us to them, Stepp said. We've been trying to work with the tribe on management of the muskie population, and we will continue to try to work with them.
That means the white folks will continue to try to tell the tribal folks how to live their lives and which parts of their heritage matter and which parts need to be subsumed within the all-consuming avarice that still attends white attempts to commercialize, mercantilize, monetize, and liquidate everything that they think they can sell for a buck. You smell a little paternalism in that statement from DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp?
We try to talk to them, but it seems like it's...
Gee, that kind of reminds me of Bocephus J. Boogermunch Friday night going to CPAC. My young white males are being systematically disenfranchised by all those black people a-voting. Maybe we should have saved him for Moran Monday. But then again, there's a follow-up from that for Moran Monday. So then this from Tom Tiffany. Super genius. I hope they reconsider the consequences of holding something like this. I believe we will have less tourism because of this. That affects all of us, including the tribes. We also need to be protective of our resources, and it sounds like this could harm the resource and consequently our economy in northern Wisconsin, Tiffany said. Sadly, there's not a paragraph there where that follows up that says, Tiffany immediately stepped into a 30-foot hole, placed there in the seconds before he took his next step by the goddess of irony, who was seen giggling madly. Do you believe that? A guy who authored a bill that will poison every last molecule of water inside
the territorial boundaries of the Bad River Reservation is concerned that we're going to have less tourism. And this could harm the resource and therefore harm our economy. How many people are going to want to come fishing in a toxic waste dump, Tom Tiffany? Oh, brother. You know, if you've been paying attention to the PRISM West Virginia American History chats of the past two Saturdays, you might have noticed Professor Keith Lilly and Dr. Bill O'Brien talking a little bit about the paternalism that was exhibited by the United States, especially in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, especially attendant upon Theodore Roosevelt's adventures in Central and South America and the South Pacific. As Professor Keith and Dr. Bill pointed out, there were at the time editorial cartoons of a father figure, Teddy Roosevelt, holding little native peoples on his lap who were represented as being various and sundry governments within the global South. Pronouncements were made in which it was declared that the United States would give such people spankings. And by spankings, we mean massacres, we mean bloodshed, we mean horrors of war, but would give them spankings if they did not do what the United States told them to do. Everything old is new again. What you people need are jobs! We're going to have good mining jobs. We're going to blow the hell out of them mountains. Half a mile wide, 22 mile long, 1,000 feet deep. Ain't going to be a drop of clean water for 500 miles. You're going to get you some jobs. Ron and Raleigh writing in, he says, just what they need. Just what our Native American brothers need is, and sisters, is more inconsiderate white folks trampling their land. I guess they didn't tear stuff up enough in the 1800s and early 1900s. Nope, there's a little bit left, and by God, they want it all, remember? They want it all. This could harm the resource and consequently our economy in northern Wisconsin. What do you think you're going to have in the way of an economy in northern Wisconsin, Tom Tiffany, when there's a half mile wide, 22 mile long, 1,000 foot deep hole in the ground and sludge ponds everywhere that are redder than blood? Morons. I wouldn't begin to know how to participate in a spear fishing enterprise, but I would have loved to have just been around for the drumming and the singing, and to maybe just vicariously get a little bit of contact with that cultural continuity that is probably, I hate to think of it as a resource. It's not a resource, because resources need management and resources need exploitation. But to be around such an energy, that continuity, that extension into the past, doing something that you know not just your father, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, your mother, your grandmother, your great-grandmother did, but that generations, countless generations, hundreds of generations, thousands of generations did before you. And the fact that you are standing there is living proof of the success of those generations who thought about you even though they could not, they knew not your name. They knew not whether you would be male or female. But in the way they lived, the extent of their lives, they knew you would be. And in how they lived their lives manifested a love for generations not only unborn, but undreamt. So while Rand Paul runs around, libertarian ophthalmologist, worrying about fetal persons, let's just say that that's incredibly short-sighted. Think about multi-generational persons. Persons 1,000 years out. To whom cultures have a commitment. Well, not this one. Not consumer culture. We don't have a commitment 5 days out. Gimme, 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 now, now, now. Because that's what American consumer culture is all about. Because if we can't have it now, then we will destroy whatever we have to make it possible to have it now. The Anishinaabe people have a tradition of thinking 7 generations out, when in fact the success of their culture suggests that they've been thinking 1,000 generations out. But Tom Tiffany and its Manufacturing Association, they can't think outside of their wallets. And if they weren't so damn dangerous, if they didn't have crimes against humanity and genocide in their hearts, they'd be pitiable. But they do have those things. And as such, no pity. No pity at all. So here we find ourselves at the end of the first hour of this More In Monday on the Horn, this 18th day of March 2013. Your nominations are welcome, and we've got scads more. We've got a journalism nomination this evening that just won't quit. We'll take our break here at the top of the hour. You're free to call in, or I'll filibuster. Either way is fine by me. You're listening to listener-supported Progressive Conversation Radio. You're listening to The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Give to me my time and money. Give to me my milk and honey. Give to me my self-respect. Golden chains around my neck. Give to me my supermodel, corporate jet and champagne bottle. Get me out there on the town. Let me spread my wealth around. I could learn to love this life I lead. Just don't take away the things I need. I feel rosy in a pink, so just don't make me stop and think. Young and fit. Give to me my haute couture. Give the world a cancer cure. Serve my breakfast al fresco. Let the wine and liquor flow. I can search for truth some other time. But right now I just wanna get what's mine. Let the gangsters rule the streets while teachers try to make it. Give it to me.
trying to tell me. You're trying to get me to show some compassion. Man, that's so out of fashion.
Give to me my Aspen winner. Sorry about the World Trade Center. I can't help the ones in need. I got my own mouth to feed. Give to me my Playboy channel. Some killer weed and sheets of flannel. Lay me down upon my bed with pleasant dreams to fill my head. Just look at what this world is coming to.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, the bumper music choices were either Rodney Crowell's Obscenity Prayer, which you just heard, or Tiffany's version of I Think We're Alone Now, which contains the line, Children Behave, which basically would serve as a sort of long-distance dedication to smug, white, elitist, and bag man for the thugs at Chris Klein's operation, Tom Tiffany. You can thank me later. I went with the Rodney Crowell. Now, let's see. A note coming in from Robert, Australia. Our second vote for Monty Python this evening. Yeah, I think we kind of got to run this. Based on, you know, contraception, Rand Paul, all of that. Yeah, let's see if this is going to roll. I think it will. Eventually. I really, really need to remove iTunes from this machine. The single most ineffective media player in the history of all media players. Yeesh. Here we go.
Now, whose tea time is it? Now, Vincent, Tessa, Valerie, Janine, Martha, Andrew, Thomas, Walter, Pat, Linda, Michael, Evadne, Alice, Dominic, and Sasha, it's your bedtime. Now, don't argue. Laura, Alfred, Nigel, Annie, Simon...
Wait! I've got something to tell the whole family.
Oh, quick, go and get the other thing, Gordon.
Go get the other.
The mill's closed. There's no more work. We're destitute. Come in, my little loves.
I've got no option but to sell you all for scientific experiments.
No, no, that's the way it is, my loves. Blame the Catholic Church for not letting me wear one of those little rubber things. Oh, they've done some wonderful things in their time. They've preserved the might and majesty, even mystery of the Church of Rome. And the sanctity of the sacraments, the indivisible oneness of the Trinity. But if they let me wear one of those little rubber things on the end of my cock, we won't be in the mess we are now. So you see my problem, little ones. I can't keep you all here any longer.
Speak up!
I can't keep you all here any longer. God has blessed us so much, I can't afford to feed you anymore.
Can you have your balls cut off?
Oh, it's not as simple as that, Nigel. God knows all. He'd see through such a cheap trick. What we do to ourselves, we do to him.
You could have had them pulled off in an accident.
No, no, children, I know you're trying to help, but believe me, my mind's made up. I've given this long and careful thought. And it has to be medical experiments for the lot of you.
For the lot of you. Thanks, Robert. Oh, God. Robert, by the way, you're getting kudos from Marty. Robert in Australia. Good man. I like someone who knows their Python. It never fails to come in handy. Now, being as how it is Moran Monday on the horn, this night, this program, this evening could not go by without, I think this has to be a winner by acclamation. Or I got to thinking about Moran Monday, and maybe we need categories now. Because God knows there are so many right-wing Morans in this country that, you know, okay, so we've got political Morans, we've got social Morans, we've got uterine Morans, we got religion Morans, and yes, sweet Jesus, yes, we have journalism Morans. No, quit that. No, this is not journalism. We have for-profit media Morans. Maybe you've seen or heard this by now. Maybe you haven't. But I can think of a couple of people who need to... Oh, no, that's just mean, Bob. Don't suggest that certain people need to be sent away for medical experimentation, just like the children in that Monty Python skit. Don't do that, Bob. Kind of hard to avoid, just the same. No, we have a profit media moran this evening. Or a pair of them, really, working together. Actually, we've got like four of them. Separate groups. But really, the cake takers in this come to us from Chicken Noodle News. You know that yesterday, Sunday, you know that the verdict was handed down in the juvenile trials of a pair of, calling them young men, they are now juvenile delinquents, a pair of rapist juvenile delinquents. They were found guilty in a court of competent jurisdiction over in Steubenville, Ohio. Following the sickening, abusive, disgusting, criminal, felonious if committed by an adult, rape of a young woman. At the trial, the lawyers for the two accused rapists, who photographed their victim, by the way, in a state of unconsciousness, drove her from one place to another, displaying her like some sort of trophy that they had gotten in war. At the trial, the lawyers for the two delinquents, the two rapists. The lawyers argued the defense that, and these guys really don't need to have law licenses anymore. I mean, it's one thing, it really is. It's one thing to make a spirited and zealous defense of one's client. It is another to make arguments that are not even remotely related to the current state of law. These two lawyers argued that the fact that the young woman had been gotten drunk and was therefore no longer capable of human communication, that's how drunk she was. They argued that her lack of communication amounted to her consent to being raped. I'm the last guy you're ever going to hear argue, last person you're ever going to hear argue that lawyers should not zealously defend their clients. And that includes things like making sure that the witnesses who are testifying against your clients aren't lying, aren't offering their testimony up for some improper purpose, like vendetta or harassment. But honest to God, arguing that a young woman who was deliberately made intoxicated and then raped, consented to being raped because she was unable to manifest lack of consent because of her intoxication, Mother McCree. But that was the trial itself. The verdict came down, and of course, with their very expensive animation graphic and their drumming music and Candy Crowley just happened to be at the broadcast desk. When the news broke, and she had a colloquy with her colleague on the ground in Steubenville, and this was the outcome. Try to get through this without vomiting. It's a little long.
This is CNN Breaking News.
What'd I tell you?
I'm Candy Crowley in Washington. Reliable Sources is just ahead, but first, a breaking story we're following. Two star high school football players in Steubenville, Ohio, have been found guilty of raping a West Virginia teenager. The story has attracted national attention. The judge just ruled a few moments ago. Listen in.
In this case, regarding the charges of rape, both defendants, Malik Richmond and Trenton Mays, are committed to the Department of Youth Services for a minimum period of 1 year, a maximum period till you're 21.
Okay, so we've got that basic detail. These two Utes are going away for at least 1 year in juvie and maybe until the age of 21. Which could be either 4 or 5 years, depending on the two individuals. Compare that to what they would face had they been treated as adults and charged with rape. They would be measuring their sentences in decades, I suspect. One wonders why they were not treated as adults. Even with this verdict, there is an argument to be made that they were handled, given special treatment. The whole thing arose out of the noxious high school football culture that surrounds the Steubenville, Ohio Big Red. in which players with promise, like these two, were basically told that the world was their oyster. And a promiscuous culture of tolerance for just about anything arose around them. So that's the sentence. They got off light. Wait. And this, for lack of good enough evidence, these are the only two who got charged. Others, including the son of the county prosecutor, walked. One of the parties where the young woman was raped was at the county prosecutor's home. The football coach, who, if information is to be believed, worked actively to try to eliminate all evidence of what his pupils, remember, he's a teacher, had done. He's still walking. But let's get to the for-profit media part of the nomination on this Moran Monday nomination.
Again, this case was played out in juvenile court. That is why there is a judge, no jury. He decided on the verdict, as well as you heard there talking about the sentence. We want to go now to CNN's Poppy Harlow. She is in studio.
Poppy Harlow, she's going to have some insightful analysis for us.
Bill has been covering this trial. I cannot imagine, having just watched this on the feed coming in, how emotional that must have been sitting in the courtroom.
Yes, Candy Crowley, member of the for-profit media, it must have been very emotional. Wonder what would make it emotional. A young woman who had been brutalized, who had been violated in the worst senses imaginable, short of murder itself. It must have been very, very emotional, Candy Crowley, for-profit media superstar. Tell us, Poppy.
I never experienced anything like it, Candy. It was incredibly emotional, incredibly difficult, even for an outsider like me.
Can we have a language moment? Incredibly. To be incredible. It stems from the root word credo, credere, credi, creditum, Latin for to believe. If one gives credit to something, one believes it. To be credible is to be believable. To be incredible is to be not believable. So this woman, Poppy, for-profit media reporter, is stating that what she witnessed inside the courtroom was not to be believed. Well, why would that be, Poppy?
To watch what happened as these two young men that had such promising futures, star football players, very good students, literally watched as they believed their life fell apart. One of the young men, Malik Richmond, when that sentence came down, he collapsed. He collapsed in the arms of his attorney, Walter Madison. He said to him, "My life is over. No one is going to want me now."
Yes. He collapsed into the arms of the lawyer who argued that his client raped the victim because she didn't say no. Because she was too drunk at the hands of these young rapists to be able to say. How in the name of God, or the Flying Spaghetti Monster, how in the name of decency do you put the two juvenile rapists first in your concerns?
this tells us a lot more about Ms. Poppy than it does about the trial. This tells us about where her concerns lay. Jesus.
It happened as these two young men that had such promising futures, star football players, very good students, literally watched as they believed their
star football players, very good students, as if that is somehow an affirmative defense to rape. Ah, Your Honor, yes. I mean, they got her drunk. Yes, they urinated on her. Yes, they raped her vaginally. Yes, they raped her anally. Yes, they took her from party to party. Yes, they violated her in a moving automobile. Yes, they photographed it. Yes, they took video talking about it. Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. But they're promising young men, young athletes, good students, Your Honor. Who also happen to be rapists.
Life fell apart. One of the young
Wait,
men...
Wait, stop. What? As their
experience anything like it, Candy. It was incredibly emotional, incredibly difficult, even for an outsider like me, to watch what happened as these two young men that had such promising futures, star football players, very good students, literally watched as they believed their life fell apart.
Their lives fell apart. There. I know that there are people out there, and I don't want to be doing any triggering. But I know there are people out there who have dealt with rape. And I know that there are people out there who have counseled people who have dealt with rape. And to hear the blithe disregard of this for-profit media twit, Ms. Poppy, casting her sympathies to the criminals, to the rapists. It's hard not to think that this is the very definition of for-profit media shark jumping. But good God, we're only a minute and 30 in.
One of the young men, Malik Richmond, when that sentence came down, he collapsed. He collapsed in the arms of his attorney, Walter Madison. He said to him, "My life is over. No one is going to want me now." Very serious crime here. Both found guilty of raping the 16-year-old girl at a series of parties back in August. Alcohol-fueled parties. Alcohol, a huge part in this. But Trent Mays was also found guilty on a second count, and that is of felony illegal use of a minor in nudity-oriented material because he took a photograph of the victim laying naked on the floor that night. Trent Mays will serve 2 years in a juvenile detention facility. Malik Richmond will serve 1 year on that one count that he was found guilty for. But I want to let our viewers listen, because for the first time in this entire trial, we have now heard from the two young men. Trent Mays stood up apologizing to the victim's family. And
Jesus, was this woman hired by defense counsel or what? Was she hired by a PR firm? Who the hell's on the managing editor's desk at CNN? Was anybody back there behind the set or to the side of the set with her, his or her head in his or her hands going, "Oh, no, not this. Oh, get in that woman's IFB. This is a valedictory for a pair of rapists. This is what you get from the for-profit media, and this is just one member of the for-profit media who massively screwed up this story.
Report after him, Malik Richmond. Listen.
Okay.
I would truly like to apologize to Elena, her family, my family, and the community. No picture should have been sent around, let alone it was taken. That's awesome. Thank you. Anything you'd like to say?
I'd like to apologize, and no pictures should have been taken. You got that? No pictures should have been taken. Well, maybe the coach finally got through to him. Boy, if you're going to do that, don't be taking the pictures. I know you like your little iPhone and everything, but sometimes it's your enemy, not your friend. I'd like to apologize to you people. I didn't have any intention to do anything like that. Why would he say intention? Did he accidentally rape the young woman? Did he negligently rape the young woman? Was she just laying there and he fell down and, well, things happen?
I'm sorry to put you guys through this. That is not...
I was sitting about 3 feet from Malik when he gave that statement. It was very difficult to watch. And you know, something that came up throughout this sentencing, Candy, was that Malik's father got up and spoke. Malik has been living with guardians. His father, a former alcoholic, gotten into a lot of trouble with the law, been in prison before. And his father stood up and he told the court,
you know, maybe he would have done better if she had been arguing his case. Now, beyond the obnoxiousness, beyond the disgusting qualities, beyond the sickening nature of this alleged reportage, there's an object lesson for all of us. And it has to do with how we approach the for-profit media. You know how CNN says it's the most trusted name in news? Feh. I wouldn't trust CNN to report on a flock of birds leaving the ground. Because, you see, objective journalism is only for when they need cover. The rest of the time, they feel free to slant things as they wish. Yeah, this is CNN. This is that member of the media that the right wing and the teabaggers and the Republican Party are forever blathering on about being liberal. Since when does a liberal news organization stand up for the rapists?
I feel responsible for this. I feel like I wasn't there for my son. And before that, he came over to the bench where his son was sitting. He approached him, he hugged him, and he whispered in his ear. And Malik's attorney said to us in the courtroom, I have never heard Malik's father before say, I love you. He's never told his son that, but he just did today. This was...
Well, damn. Get out the violins. I'm progressive. I'm liberal. If anybody, and we can have a conversation about how a permissive culture, the permissive athletic religion that attends so many high schools leads young people down a disastrous path. In this case, it's rape. Substance abuse, wholesale disrespect for people just because they happen to be female, a sense of entitlement to do as they will and the law be damned because a culture has arisen in the entire town that permits that.
We can have that conversation. We can talk about what it means for a young man to guess why Malik was being raised in someone's house besides that of his family. Is it because you had the foster parents were some sort of squishy liberals that just felt the need to reach it? Hell no. It's because Malik could run a 4.5 40. If Malik did not have athletic skills, God only knows where he'd be. But he was harvested out of the system so that he could play for the Steubenville Big Red. Back to you, Poppy.
It's an incredibly emotional day. These two juveniles being carried out right now. I'm watching people line up, and they will be committed today, Candy.
Poppy Harlow in Steubenville, Ohio for us. I want to bring in Paul Callen.
Yeah, because you haven't dug the hole deep enough yet, Candy. Who is Paul Callen?
CNN legal contributor. You know, Paul, a 16-year-old now just sobbing in court, regardless of what big football players they are, they still sound like 16-year-olds.
Do you want to go give them a cookie for committing rape, Candy?
The other one's 17, a 16-year-old victim. The thing is, when you look...
The mention of the 16-year-old victim is an afterthought to Candy Crowley.
Listen to it and you realize that they could stay until they're 21. They are going to get credit for time served. What's the lasting effect, though, on two young men being found guilty in juvenile court?
Oh! Must not... What's the lasting effect for two... I can only assume that whoever used to talk to Candy Crowley in her IFB has been downsized. And the microphone... Because if this was really journalism and not just for-profit media sensationalism, the director or the producer or whoever it is that does that job would be leaning over the little goosenecked microphone, pressing the little red button as if it was a telegraph key. Candy. Can you talk a little bit about the lasting effect on the victim who got raped, Candy? Could you do that? But apparently there was no one there to do that. Understand this not as a one-off, not as just some incidental failure on the part of for-profit media. Understand this as the direct and proximate consequence of what people were talking about all during the 2012 election cycle, that this country really, really does have a culture of rape. If you go and you look up the actual statistics for the number of women raped in this country, and I don't have it at hand, but it's shocking. It approaches 1 in 2. You got two daughters? Statistics say, okay, 1 in 3. 1 in 4. You got 4 daughters? One of them's been raped. Do you as a man have 4 female friends?
Odds are, one of them's been raped. And women? Jesus. I hesitate to say anything. Simply because, as a male, all I can do is note what a horror it is. I can't begin to talk about what kind of horror, or what constitutes the horror, or how the horror manifests itself. Jesus God. Now, what was that you were asking about there, Candy?
A 16-year-old now just sobbing in court, regardless of what big football players they are, they still sound like 16-year-olds. The other one, 17, a 16-year-old victim. The thing is, when you listen to it and you realize that they could stay until they're 21, they are going to get credit for time served. What's the lasting effect, though, on two young men being found guilty in juvenile court of rape, essentially?
Well, you know, Candy, we've seen here a courtroom drenched in tears and tragedy. And, you know, Poppy's description, I think...
Tragedy? Really? Tragedy? We've had a discussion about the meaning of that word.
You know, sums it all up. But across America, scenes like this happen all the time. I know as a prosecutor and a defense attorney, when that verdict is handed down, usually it's just the families of the defendants and the victims. There's always that moment of just lives are destroyed, and lives have already been destroyed by the crime, and we got a chance to
finally
see that. But in terms of what happens now, yeah, the most severe thing with these young men is being labeled as registered sex offenders. That label is now placed on them by Ohio law. And by the way, the laws in most other states now require such a designation in the face of such a serious crime. That will haunt them for the rest of their lives. Employers, when looking up their background, will see that they're registered sex offenders. When they move into a new neighborhood and somebody goes on the internet where these things are posted, neighbors will know that they're a registered sex offender. It's really something that will have a lasting impact, much more of a lasting impact than going to a juvenile facility for 1 or 2 years.
In other words, they're the victims. The rapists are the victims. But that ain't all. ABC News explained that Malik Richmond engaged in the rape because he was in a celebratory mood. That's a quote. Trent Mays, the photographer, well, to ABC News, the trial was every parent's nightmare and a cautionary tale for teenagers living in today's digital world. Yeah, it wasn't. It's not about the rape. It's because they got caught. If only they hadn't put it on Facebook or tweeted it or Jesus. Then there's Ron Allen. Over to the NBC. For-profit media news. Yeah, this is another dandy. Once again, more concerned about football than about human beings.
The verdict was guilty today for two Steubenville, Ohio high school football players in the rape of a 16-year-old girl. The crime took place against the backdrop of an alcohol-fueled night of partying, later amplified by tweets, posted photos, and video. It left the town of Steubenville deeply divided, and in many ways tonight stands as a cautionary tale to a generation that has come of age in the era of social networking. NBC's Ron Allen is in Steubenville for us again tonight. Ron?
Good evening, Lester. Malik Richmond and Trent Mays must now register as sex offenders. They could be in juvenile detention until they're 21 years old. The judge convicted them based on eyewitness testimony and thousands of text messages, many of them quite graphic, discussing the rape of a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah, social media's fault. Sure. Why not?
This does not define who my daughter is. She will persevere, grow, and move on. I have pity for you both. I hope you fear the Lord, repent for your actions, and pray hard for his forgiveness.
Both boys had promising football careers. Mays the quarterback, Richmond the receiver, on the beloved high school team, and dreams of college. In court, their lawyers and parents pleaded with the judge not to impose a harsh sentence.
I'm still trying to believe.
Yeah, because it's about those promising football careers. Let's see. The Associated Press was good for leading with the intoxication of the victim. And the two rapists were described by the Associated Press as two members of the high school football team that is the pride of Steubenville. And Yahoo News, meantime, was more worried about the effect on the community than the effect on the victim. I don't think I've seen this big a for-profit media fail in a long time. But then ultimately, there's, of course, Radio Rwanda. Radio Rwanda, who made a point of telling the young woman's name to the wide, wide world. I don't know her name. I wouldn't tell you if I did. But Radio Rwanda thought it would be fair and balanced, since Mays and Richmond's names had been brought up, that they also tell the world who the rape victim was. Because, you know, rape victims just love that. Robert writing in from Australia. What that reporter said, that's just sick. But while this horror was going on, why did no one stop them? That's probably best answered, Robert, by understanding and I don't know. What are high school athletics like in Australia? Do they completely dominate the entire reason for being of the school in the first place? Because that's what happens in high schools here. If an athlete is able to run, jump, throw, kick, catch, whatever, odds are, and it is certainly more likely in male sports than in female, the world will be bent to shape the suiting of the wants, not the needs, of the athlete. High schools in this country are life support systems for athletics. So too, in large part, witness the unfolding annual drama of the for-profit media's March Madness. So too are colleges, institutions of higher learning. Between Jerry Sandusky and this, getting right up against being absolutely done with all of it. And guess what? I guess this is the denouement to the whole story. Steubenville going to still have a big red. Steubenville still going to have them a football team. They're going to play. Yeah, really. More in Monday. And that goes past more ends. Well, the media are the more ends in this. Why didn't someone stop them, Robert? Where were the parents? Well, in the case of one of the places where the parties were, the parent was the prosecuting attorney of the county. and it was going down in her basement. And her son was there. She's still got a law license. She's still a prosecuting attorney. And her son was not charged. You see, it wasn't just these two. Yeah, they did the deeds. But damn near, well, who can say what the number is? There were oodles of accessories before and after the fact. They walked. They walked. Because, you know, it's just rape. Welcome to America. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, this has been a pretty sad state of affairs with the for the for-profit media in our country. I was trying to look for the word. Maybe you can help me. When reporting a story, bias, that's what I want to look for.
Right.
That's the word.
That much-vaunted objectivity.
Exactly. You want, on any story, you want, or I want, a report that's not going to have any bias, one way or another, just report the facts. And that's not really possible to a large degree, but you can get as close to that as you can. And I think all three cable news networks this weekend just forgot what they learned in school.
They never learned it, Kevin.
Yeah, well, they need to go back to their 8th and 9th grade classes because
But this is part of that culture, though. It was a big deal at the morning meeting at CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, what have you. This was brought up, you know, the verdict will be coming in today. So we'll be ready to take a live shot. And apparently, I mean, isn't it kind of weird that NBC, ABC, and CNN all managed to come down on the sympathy for the rapist side of things?
Well, it's kind of amazing to me. You know, the thing I'd like to ask Miss Crowley or Poppy is put yourself in the girl's place. Would you be reporting in the story like you just did? Would you be having so much sympathy for the victims if that were you that not only was violated in that way, but now has been literally dragged through the mud with all the accusations, and how is the town divided over rape? I don't get that one either. But, and then Fox, of course, decides to release the girl's name. And to me, rape is not one of those things that, you know, I'm left-leaning or right-leaning on. That should be something that's a crime. It's just a crime. I don't take a position of, okay, it's a Democrat that committed the rape, so I'll let him off. And if it's a Republican, we'll lock the jailhouse down on. No, it goes both ways. And I just don't understand it. I don't understand how anybody that has a conscience could have reported the stories like CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News did this weekend. And I saw the uproar on Twitter over the Fox coverage of it, or over the CNN coverage of it, but I never heard the clip until you just played it. Now I understand. I understand why it was so offensive. And my question is, how could you?
I'm trying to be very careful, Kevin, in my attempt or what passes for it, attempted analysis of this, because at the risk of engaging in sexism, which I do not intend,
yep.
in a way, not accept and certainly not excuse, but I can expect that kind of cluelessness from someone who shares in male privilege.
Yep.
But to have two women, Candy Crowley and Poppy, what's her name?
Harlow, Poppy Harlow.
Harlow, yeah, okay, yeah, Jean Harlow. Okay, that's how, Poppy Harlow and Candy Crowley sitting there being, is this, and I ask this not as a rhetorical question, Kevin, but as a legitimate, straightforward one, is this what happens when you start cashing the big, the big-time for-profit media paychecks? That it's not your bias that goes out the window, but your sense of proportion and propriety?
Yep. And to my knowledge, I don't watch that much TV anymore, but I haven't seen one story on any site that's sympathetic to the victim in any way, shape, or form. It's either a story about the two convicted kids and what they're going to have to be dealing with the next 1 to 5 years, or it's a story about how the rapist divided the town and, what about the victim?
Kevin, I ask seriously, is that because this country is largely numb to the idea of rape? Is it because focusing on the horrors of a rape has become mundane to the for-profit media?
Well,
I mean, here's where I'm going with that. Are we to assume that because this clip is from the breaking news segment, that the setup in which you would describe in at least competent journalistic terms, if not graphic ones, the fact that this young woman was gotten intoxicated,
yep,
that she was raped in one place, put in a car, continued to be abused, raped in another place, that photographs and video of her were taken,
yep,
and that it was witnessed by God knows how many people,
yep,
is that just too much of a setup? I mean, that was a six minute moment there that I played. Mind you, with some breaks in it to talk about it. That was a six-minute segment.
Yep.
Was there no time in there inside the profit structure of CNN to allow for even a scintilla of sympathy for the young woman who was raped?
Yeah. That's what I kept thinking about during that whole clip that you played, because the limited coverage I've heard all weekend has been the same thing. What these young men are going to have to go through for the next year, or, well, what about the victim? What's she going to have to go through for the next 30, 40 years, knowing that happened to her? What kind of psychological damage is there to her, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, it's just, but you mentioned, have they become immune to what? How bad the crime is, you have to look back over the past 10, 15 years and see how they've become immune to war as it's been engaged. It used to be that journalism was supposed to be your fourth estate, and now it's basically a PR machine for whichever side they support, and mostly the right side. But we had the war, we had the shootings in Newtown, and it just seems like, they've become immune to all of it. And instead of reporting the story, they were more interested in reporting their opinions. And I think that's why a lot of people have just checked out of watching the cable news networks, because, there's no genuine reporting going on in there anymore. And then on Sundays, if you're lucky, you'll get something like the prison porn. It's just, I don't know. I can't deal with it anymore. And And I just wanted to comment on how bad I thought this was in terms of the way the story is being reported. And the other thing is, you know, you had the big uproar yesterday on the Twitters about it. You've had 16 hours of a day go through today, and I still haven't seen anything from CNN apologizing or even explaining why they chose to do that way. And so,
why should they?
Well, if I were the editor of CNN, I would answer it this way. We're responsible to our viewers for the content of the news that we choose to air. And we ought to be concerned about how the story is portrayed and both the victims and the criminals. It is reported accurately and without bias. But you won't get any comment like that from me.
No.
But I am a little bit shocked that there hasn't been any comment from CNN, given all the uproar that's over that. And Fox just, you know.
Well, I mean, this is if there was any doubt, this is final proof, isn't it, Kevin, that there is absolutely no consideration for ethics whatsoever at Fox News.
No, and I saw a clip yesterday, maybe you could tell me, it was a breaking news thing I got in my emails, something about there's more phone hacking scandal information coming out. Did you see that?
I didn't.
The little guy had just basically said it that way, much more phone hacking scandal information coming out, but the email didn't give me a link or anything, so I couldn't research it past that. So, not that it would happen, but I sure hope that phone scandal can be proven to have happened over here and hopefully tarnish that whole supposed image that Fox has, because I got too many relatives and friends that are brainwashed by them, and, you know, that's what scares me, is when I hear someone tell me, well, Fox is the only one that is telling the truth, you know, then I don't know what to say to that. You know, I can say the obvious, you're crazy, but past that, I don't even know what to say. It's just such a sad comment on people's willingness to search for the truth. And so, anyway. One other thing I wanted to ask you before I go is the, what's the name of the tribe that you were talking about earlier with the gentleman from up there in Wisconsin?
Well, there are a number of bands of, there's different pronunciations based on how, white people misapprehended their names, Ojibwe or Chippewa, but it falls under the larger generalized, and this is the native word, Anishinaabe.
Anishinaabe, okay. What do you think can be done for them by someone like me other than, well, if I were to blog about it or tweet about it?
Yeah, then it needs to get out there. It needs to be known. It needs to be the silence needs to be broken.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting to, is I just don't know how to tweet it. First of all, I don't know how to spell the band name of Anishinaabe.
Well, just Ojibwe.
Okay. So, you know,
Or sometimes Ojibwaye.
Yeah. Okay. And what would you suggest, like, is there a website that you could direct people to, or?
As far as stories about this, the place that I'm seeing them aggregate the most is under a Facebook group called People Concerned About the Proposed Pinocchio Mine.
Okay. And how do you spell Pinocchio?
P-E-N-O-K-E-E.
P-E-N-O-K-E-E.
Correct.
Okay, people concerned about the proposed Pinocchio mine.
Yeah, it's a Facebook group.
Okay. So just go to Facebook.com and...
look for them, yeah.
Search for it, yeah. Well, I'll start to think of something on that because I've heard you talk about them, but I ain't heard any other stories whatsoever about them other than on the horn. So I'd like to see that, you know, like you were saying earlier, it's not just one place. It's a whole band of people there in northern Wisconsin whose lifestyle...
Well, but the peoples themselves extend into Minnesota.
Exactly.
Over into Michigan and up into Canada.
Yeah. And, again, we see the United States violating treaties that were set back in the 1800s.
Well, it yet remains to be determined whether the United States will tolerate the state of Wisconsin's violation of those treaty rights, because it has not been challenged in court.
Well,
that's one of the next steps, as I understand it.
And that might be a good place to start, because people can write, call to the White House and voice that they want the administration to support the Ojibwe people. You know, that might be a nice place to start. I'm just thinking of ways that the message can get out beyond the...
Well, look, it all helps, Kevin. It all helps. Tweeting, Facebooking, social media. Another thing worth following is Idle No More.
Yep. Yeah, by following them, not closely, but I have followed what they've had to say, and I follow them on the Twitters, but honestly, you know, because of my challenges with a computer, it's kind of hard to keep up with all that, so I might miss a tweet here and there, that kind of thing. I'm getting better at it, though, I got to say that. So I'm going to try Facebook. I think I mastered Twitter to the point of, okay, well, I'm going to go over to Facebook and give that a shot.
I can hardly stand Facebook, even being abled in ways differently than you. So good luck, Kevin.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know how to say it other than 6 months ago when I got on Facebook, I took one look at it and said, can't do it. But now that I've been on it, it's like all of a sudden a light bulb goes off, and where you couldn't master something at all of a sudden it just all comes to you. And, it's kind of a neat feeling when that happens.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Kevin, I appreciate the call, and thank you very much.
Yep, and certainly we all out there appreciate what you've been doing today, and appreciate the horn's message, and don't ever forget that the Horn Radio Network is doing a service, and you get the technical glitches, which are frustrating, but yeah, it's too important a show. It's too important to keep getting the truth out there to get discouraged about what we're doing, Bob. And so keep plugging away at it, because you are making a difference.
So, thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Anyway, I shall talk to you later, my friend.
All right. Be well, Kevin. Take care.
You too.
Bye now. From Colorado Springs, that's Kevin. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Pretty good for the start of the week, I think.
Well, listen, I wanted to talk about the Steubenville case. And I must tell you, Bob, when I heard that our Attorney General, Mike DeWine,
yes,
was getting involved with the case.
Well, he managed. He took over the prosecution because of the fact that the county prosecutor there in Steubenville, well, she had a conflict of interest, to say the least.
Well, Mike DeWine is a right-wing anti-abortion, anti-gay,
anti-contraception.
Yes. nut. And so I'm not looking for the case to be investigated to expand. He may, and I read on the Democratic Underground that he announced that there was going to be further investigations. But look, if the Republican Party, if there are Republicans to be protected, that's what Mike DeWine is going to do. And I find this narrative that has come out of this case, protecting the rapists, I just find that very strange. You know, where is that narrative coming from, and who, you know?
Well, and that was the question that I was trying to get at, and I suppose inartfully expressed, Juanita, in that how is it that the story of the poor little boys who will be dogged by a rape conviction for the rest of their days, how is it that that becomes the narrative not just on one cable news outlet, but on ABC, on NBC, on Fox, in the Associated Press, and on Yahoo News? How does that happen? Is it because all the for-profit media reporters are standing around in the break room of the Judicial Annex? Oh, what do you got? I don't know. What do you got? Is that how that happens, or is it part of a larger prepared narrative? And I'm trying to be paranoid here. I don't know the answer.
Well, I don't know either, other than the media tends to be their default setting is conservative. And therefore, issues that, you know, that are important to women do not get the type of analysis that it should. As a matter of fact, the women who have positions in the for-profit media are not that bright, and that's the way they want it. Now, Rachel Maddow is probably, in my opinion, the smartest woman that's been on television, but she is rare. They really don't, you know. They either put women who are clueless about women's issues or women who view women through the same lens as men. You understand what I mean?
Yes, I do.
So, it'll be interesting to see how this evening MSNBC covers it, but, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. I look forward to get shift down, just like the Pennsylvania thing with what's his name that you mentioned tonight?
Sandusky.
Yeah. Because there are big, there are important people involved, and those kids were, you know, getting away with that behavior for I don't know how long, you know, and
or if not specifically rape. I think it is pretty clearly established now, Juanita, that there was a permissive culture around misdeeds by the Steubenville football team, the basketball team, I don't know, maybe the baseball team and the wrestling team. But and I guess the larger point to be made, though, is that this is a problem. This is not a Steubenville High School problem. This is not a Steubenville problem. This is an America problem. Because I dare and defy anyone to find me a successful high school football program that does not have something going on in it similar to, if not identical, to this.
Well, I used to volunteer for the Elizabeth Blackwell Center here in Columbus, which has a rape hotline. And the busiest time is football season. That's when you get a lot of the calls for rapes. However, Bob, we live in a culture where it is a rape culture, and it, you know, it's part of men's culture. It's not part of women's culture to see men humiliated, to see men demeaned, or even to see men sexualized. I mean, we don't have to have pornographic pictures of men in order to feel, you know, great. But we live in a culture where men, it's part of their upbringing. It is part of their upbringing to, you know, to put women down, to see women demeaned, to see women humiliated. You can, you know, just go in the grocery store and look at the magazine covers of women in various stages of undress. And it gets, and it, you, as a young man, it is very easy to think that that's what women are here for. They are here for your sexual gratification. Because that's what the culture says. Everything's sexualized. If you go on Google and try to find pictures of strong women, you have to go through all the sexualized images. For example, if you put in warrior women, what you'll get is women in various stages of undress with swords and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah, going into battle in a coordinated set from Victoria's Secret. No, I know the art.
Oh yeah. So, you know, it's you know, when you see women being sexualized, you have to complain. You have to complain. And
from the right wing, Juanita, that'll get you called a feminazi.
Exactly. But it's very, 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 it's a very prevalent thing in our culture. I mean, even, you know, I was watching, there's a program, I think it's called Investigative Discovery. It's where they have crimes, actual crimes that are reenacted, you know. And the women are always, the women that they choose to act out the parts always have breast implants, and they're always sexualized. Even when they're dead, they're sexualized.
Right. If we're not, if we are not hypersexualizing a woman, then we are infantilizing her.
Exactly. Exactly.
In this country, a woman cannot simply be a woman. Consider, and I'm taking this outside of the politics of it. Consider the demeaning comments that have been levied toward Hillary Clinton for, good God, 21 years now.
Oh, yeah.
21 years.
Absolutely.
And the whole Kenneth Starr thing was as much an attempt to vicariously humiliate Hillary Clinton as it was to bring down a president.
Oh yes, and also Michelle Obama, some of the ugliest depictions of
it's hard to even discuss that, Juanita, because that is the mingling of misogyny and racism, and you get this toxic stew that it almost defies discussion, you know, from the Angela Davis portrait on what, the New Yorker.
Mm-hmm. And they're
to this latest thing at CPAC by 1L Michelle Bachman, in which she referred to them, to the Obamas as living lavish lifestyles while America suffers.
Oh, yes. But you will be hard-pressed, I mean, to find any depictions of Laura Bush or, the left just didn't do it. I mean, they had toilet brushes ready for Hillary Clinton, where they had her head as a toilet brush in case she became president. I remember seeing those online. They had a, you know, a bevy of products they were going to sell, and one of them was a toilet brush with her head, you know.
Jeez.
But, you know, again.
And all of this, I mean, there's so much cultural background here, Juanita. All of this comes in against the backdrop of a whole bunch of pasty-faced, doughy, male, well, maybe there was no one non-pasty-faced, doughy, male senator voting against the Violence Against Women Act.
Yes. Yes. And that's one other thing I want to say, Bob. Don't you find it a little bit funny that heterosexual men are so petrified of gay men harassing them sexually,
it doesn't even have to rise to harassment. There is a legal defense out there that if a gay man says to a straight man, "I think you're cute," that the straight man is then empowered to beat him to death.
Yes, and yet they don't understand when a woman is violated in a most, you know, disgusting way, and yet they find that hard to believe. Yet they are so afraid of a gay man until they don't want him in the military. They don't want him in the locker room with the football, you know, in the football team. And, but yet they'd have no understanding.
And yet on any given NFL Sunday and on any given Saturday and any given Friday night, there are gay males in locker rooms suiting up to go play football.
Of course. But, you know, again, I find it hypocritical that they are so afraid of being, you know, sexualized and, harassed the same way they do women. The same way that some of them do women, they don't want done to them. So,
by the way, I just as a sort of follow up, Marty just sent this story in to me, Juanita. It is dated today.
Mm-hmm.
Two 16-year-old girls are in custody after making threats against the victim in the Steubenville rape case in Ohio, according to local media reports. The two teens, both Steubenville residents, allegedly threatened to assault and kill the victim via Twitter. One teen turned herself in. The other one was arrested. They're being held in the Jefferson County Juvenile Detention Center. They face aggravated menacing charges. And is it a coincidence that this happened after Fox broadcast the name of the young woman?
Of course. Of course, that's what happened.
The world is just full of coincidences, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Bob. Well, I'll let you go. And,
all right. Well, Juanita, I thank you for the call, and I appreciate the dialogue. I really do. And the insight.
Right. Bye-bye.
You have a good evening. Bye.
You too.
Juanita calling from Ohio, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up?
Hey, Jim. What's happening?
You. I've got a few answers to a question that was proposed by, I think, Kevin. What do you say to people who talked about Fox News and how it's the fountainhead of truth?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I tell them?
What?
You're full of shit.
Direct? Short?
Direct.
To the point?
To the point.
Shakespeare said, brevity is the soul of wit.
No, in their case, in Fox's case, their brevity is the soul of shit because they're so damn stupid. I mean, anybody who could believe that garbage that comes out of Fox, I just don't understand it.
Well, the one thing that had happened
ever since 1996 when they first came on the air, I first looked at them and I saw those three idiots they have up there, the ones that are sharing the brain like the Stygian witches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the morning show.
I thought to myself, this ain't for me. And then I sent them a few emails, and I was blocked.
Well, that's how they are. No, I meant you were exercising the soul of wit. Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, trying to, but I was just carrying it further to the stuff that I hear over that network. I just can't believe what they say.
Well, based on the monumental screw-ups of the for-profit media that we've gone through here, you know, there was at least a tacit understanding among them, Jim, that none of them would broadcast the name of the victim. But Fox decided to break with that, I don't know, out of solidarity with the rapists? Who knows?
Oh, they just wanted to have an extra news bit and embarrass somebody and bring them into the public light and probably, I'm sure, sympathize with the guys who perpetrated this horrible crime against that young woman. I mean, these people are twisted.
They are. They absolutely are.
I mean, they're more twisted than Dee Snider's hair. Don't you know?
Yeah. Being pointed out in the chat room, by the way, that it would not be allowed in Canada for the victim's name to be publicly broadcast. I guess that's why Fox isn't on in Canada.
Well, good for them. I mean, God almighty. You know, I've got shortwave, and I listen to Pravda or the Russian Federation Network and stuff like that, and also online. And I listen to Vatican Radio. And, hell, they're more truthful and balanced as far as reporting things are concerned than Fox News. I mean, Vatican Radio is one of my major news sources besides San Francisco and other places. I pull them up there, you know, they stream.
Yeah. Well, sadly, for whatever the dynamic was, Jim, on any given night, we have examples of bad for-profit media.
Well, of course,
behavior. But like I said, this is the biggest across-the-board fail that I recall seeing in quite some time. You know, where they all get it wrong the same way at the same time.
You mean by sympathizing with the perpetrators?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that a little odd. As a matter of fact, MSNBC's been going on all about it tonight, ever since you've been talking.
Oh, have they?
Mm-hmm. Sure have. And, you know, how the sympathy with a lot of people is for the, not the victim, but the perpetrators. And that's pretty shitty as far as I'm concerned. I'll just say it straight out. That's how I feel.
Well, why does...
I mean, Bob,
I don't want to dig myself a hole, but if you're actually doing journalism, why do you have to express sympathy for someone in order to? Because when I was just a kid taking ninth grade journalism or whatever, you know, they told us that there were five questions: who, what, when, where, why, how,
I know.
And occasionally how much.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe five, maybe six. Where in there is the S for sympathy? And because sympathy is for the reader. Sympathy is for the viewer. Empathy is for functioning human beings. But in order to be sympathetic or unsympathetic, all we need are the facts. But instead we get this little love letter to a pair of rapists delivered by Poppy Harlow and empowered by Candy Crowley.
Oh, well, was Candy wearing white, or has she decided to get away from that now?
It's before Easter, Jim. Come on.
Well, like I say, you can show how the West was blown on her backside. I mean, God almighty. Sorry about that if I offend anybody, but no, I'm not sorry. Hell, I don't give a shit. I've gotten to the point in my life where I'm just an old curmudgeon. And I just call things like I see them, basically like you do, except in nicer tones and nicer terms.
Now, wait a minute. I haven't dropped the brown word all night, Jim, and I got you down for three at least so far.
No, I just said in nicer tones and nicer terms. You are corrected.
The brown word is not a term?
Oh, it's just another word as far as I'm concerned, but it certainly describes how I feel about people who are in sympathy with these idiots or these miscreants. And people who show sympathy for that when they rape a woman, I don't give a damn how old they are, what kind of football team they play on, or whatever the hell they do. I don't have any sympathy for them. Anybody who does is full of shit.
And I think that's about as succinctly as it can be expressed.
Well, I mean, I don't believe in wasting words. I mean, I guess in the military, I learned you had to basically keep it short and simple.
Yeah.
And as far as women are concerned, what, like your last caller was talking about, Mrs. Clinton or Mrs. Obama, I think a great deal of those ladies.
But you will agree that they have been absolutely vilified.
Well, yeah, they have been. I mean, so was Geraldine Ferraro. I voted for her back in when?
That would be 88.
Mm-hmm. Sure did. Was so happy to see a woman on the ticket. Hell, I didn't want Obama in the first place. I wanted Mrs. Clinton. I have a lot of respect for her. I mean, she took shit and made sugar out of it. I'm just sorry. Excuse my language, but it's got to the point that that's just how I feel. I mean, if they're going to throw it at me, I'm going to throw it right back at them.
I don't think it's necessarily something to apologize for, Jim.
I'm not.
Because if we had more of a take no guff approach, we might get less guff in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'll tell you. In my professional career, I've had three answers. Yes, sir, no, sir, no excuse, sir. But
right.
I'm not under that now. And when somebody starts throwing stuff like that at me, I'll give it right back to them.
By the way, for really good news delivery, Don and Maureen out in Arizona stand just dropped a note in and said, tell Jim to try Al Jazeera TV English. It's the best place we found to get straight, hard news without a bias. It streams live on the Internet at AJE Live.
Yeah, been there. Also, there was another reaction to this thing when it first blew up in Stupidville, and that was by Tracy Lords.
Right. Yeah.
Now, I'll guarantee you one thing.
Well, that town has a long history, and it is in the twilight of its existence.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard it's like going out of business, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing left there. Nothing left.
Except their football team.
Apparently. And you know, as noted, These two individuals will be serving some sort of punishment for what they did, but there's a lot of people walking away from this who did not get touched, and that includes the football coach.
Oh yeah. Oh, by the way, did you hear what your favorite blonde-haired vixen, what's her name, who went to CPAC, said about the governor of New Jersey?
I'm not sure who my favorite vixen is, and no, what?
Oh, you know, you mentioned her name earlier. I can't think of it right now. I try not to. She attended CPAC first as 2.0 and 3.0, 4.0, or whatever it is. But oh, Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, no, she's not. Is she a blonde? I thought she was well.
It depends on what day it is. I mean, better things through better living, through chemistry. But, I mean, you know, and she had a lot to say. And, of course, you saw Sarah Palin get up there and with her big gulp. Did you see that?
Oh, dear God. I was trying not to mention it.
Oh, Lord, what are you up to?
No, she's a nobody. She's a has-been, washed-up, wannabe, halftime idiot.
Oh, yeah, she was up there playing with a big gulp and sucking on a straw and this, that, and the other. And she said that Todd, what'd she say? Todd gave me a gun and a rack for Christmas. He's got the gun and I've got the rack. I mean, that's just the mentality of these people who attended that particular function outside of D.C.
I know, but it's stuff like that that makes me understand why fundamentalist Pentecostals drink strychnine.
Well, I don't know what religion's got to do with it, but I know she's just a stupid woman, and basically.
Well, the point is, she is one, and I think I think she did too much at some point. Oh yeah, have you never seen the video of her being anointed and having witches cast out? And yeah, it's precious.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Was she in some kind of fancy dress or whatever?
No. It was as I recall, it was that they're at their full gospel tabernacle herpetological sanctuary up in Wasilla or whatever, and some preacher from Africa came over and prayed over her and protected her against witches. No kidding.
Witches?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, and he was one of those guys that has gotten crowds whipped up in some country in Africa and wound up with, you know, old people stomped and cudgeled and bludgeoned to death because they were declared to be the town witch.
You know, it's just amazing that stuff still goes on. These witch hunts and things like that. Of course, you've had witch hunts throughout our modern history. I mean, witch hunts didn't stop with the burning times in Germany or whenever, you know, that occurred when they were, you could go into a village in Germany in the, mid-15th, 16th century, and you couldn't find any women there. They'd all been burned at the stake.
Right, and a lot of the ones that the church burned at the stake for witchery, one of the things that constituted witchery was suggesting that people might avoid disease by bathing once in a while.
Or they were the women who basically knew herbs and things of that nature.
Right, and how to successfully bring children into the world. Right.
Right, midwives and things of that nature. I mean, I'm just thoroughly pissed off at this whole thing about the denigration of women and stuff like that. I mean, you know, you'll never, ever have to worry about me even thinking about raping a woman.
And the thing is,
if I should go into an adult bookstore, that's a section that I just leave behind because guess what? It ain't my thing.
Nope. And I don't understand those power dynamics, Jim. Because rape, you know, we must understand first and foremost that rape is not a sex crime. And this is something that's really hard to get through to right-wing men and right-wingers in general. Rape is not a sex crime. It is a crime of violence, and it is a manifestation of power.
Yeah, overpowering.
And hatred.
Human being and hatred and stuff like that. And any man who would do something like that is just, he's less than human as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, as far as my treatment of him is concerned, it will be less than humane.
Indeed.
But, I mean, it's constantly publicized, and as your last caller indicated, that you see all these women, and they all have to be either buck naked or in some type of diaphanous negligee or some kind of crap like that. And women are not thought of as human beings. They're thought of as objects of desire on the point of being, well, let me rephrase that, chattels.
Yeah. Which?
Sexual chattels.
Physical chattels.
Well, physical, sexual chattels and stuff like that. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, it goes all the way back. It goes all the way back to, which is not that long ago, in most any culture, when women were deemed to be the property of men. That's why, you know, that's why you get who gives this woman away in a wedding ceremony. It is a hearkening back to the fact that a marriage was, in fact, a property transfer.
My dad had to go to a wedding one time, and there was a friend of his who wasn't too well educated, and his daughter was getting married. And when the question was asked, who gives this woman marriage, this guy said, me and my wife.
No. Maybe that was kind of enlightened.
Well,
me and my wife.
Me and my wife. He came out of that church and came home and told me about it, and I started laughing. We all started laughing because the guy was just, you know, diminishing by it. But, I mean, you know, I guess that's just his way of expressing himself. Me and my wife. But, I don't know. This rape culture that you've been talking about, I just don't understand that, because I don't understand rape. I don't understand mental processes that go into it, and I cannot understand why.
Well, the first step,
I would force myself on any human being. Bob, I wouldn't even do that, you know, even in conversation. I do it to you. Because you deserve it, but nonetheless.
Well, yeah, I've been working on earning it for years, Jim. But no, the reason you don't understand it, Jim, is because you do not have the essential first step in getting to rape, and that is thinking it is literally the objectification of females generally, and an attitude toward females that says that they are somehow lesser than males.
Well, I think gay
and objectification, and you know, because once you've gotten there, well, the whole, you know, the whole bat's roost opens up.
Oh yeah, I mean women aren't the only victims of this type of thing. If you're a last caller, Juanita pointed out, I mean, you're basically talking about gay men.
Well, look,
I've been treated.
I got a story right here. The man who is presently closing on the inside rail in the race for most outrageously idiotic Republican, a guy named Steve Stockman from Texas. The Violence Against Women Act was passed in both houses. It was signed into law, and Steve Stockman's still mad. He said, in talking about it, he said, "This is truly a bad bill. This is helping the liberals. This is horrible. Unbelievable. What really bothers, it's called a women's act, but then they have men dressed up as women. They count that. Change gender or whatever. How is that? How is that a woman?"
Oh, dear. He's getting into drag queens now?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Because finally, after years of being murdered and beaten and raped and stabbed and broken and beat, battered and cudgeled, and hey, there's the second use of the word cudgel for tonight, The Violence Against Women Act, the reauthorization did two things. It brought LGBT, it brought persons of gender dysphoria, or whatever the proper term is. I'm not trying to be dismissive there, but it brought trans women and trans people into the ambit, the purview, the protective the circle of the Violence Against Women Act, and it brought in Native women. And so I guess old Steve Stockton is so scared of a drag queen that he feels like they ought not have have any protections.
My God, Bob, I know women that I've talked to who actually have told me that they get their makeup tips from drag queens.
Oh, I know.
I mean, this girl said, hell, they know more about it than I do. Hell,
maybe they got to work harder at it.
No, she said to me, and this is just a direct quote, a couple of years ago, she said, "When I want to get made up to go out and do what I'm going to do, I go over to so-and-so's house and have him do it, because he does it a hell of a lot better than I do."
Well, Max Factor was a real person, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I know Ben Nye was, and of course, that's still the leading name in theatrical.
We're not talking about theatrical makeup. We're just talking
about that. But I mean, there's a history and a heritage there. You know, if some trans person is left in a pool of blood, Steve Stockton, upstanding, God-fearing man of right-wing righteousness, wants to make sure that the law affords no special protection for that person.
Well, he's
reminiscent of that state legislator in Tennessee who said, "Well, if I was ever come on to by one of them drag queens, I'd stomp a mud hole in him and then keep stomping."
Well, I hate to tell him, if he comes into one of those drag queens and he wants to do that, he better know what the hell he's doing, because I can guarantee you one thing, he might find something he don't want to deal with, like, you know, a pair, like a straight razor and some Vaseline or whatever. I mean, you know, throughout my experience, social experience and stuff like that, I've dealt with a lot of drag queens and stuff like that, and, you know, say how do and stuff like that, and if I know them, you know, it's fine. It's never been a thing of mine. I mean, I've never been in drag. Have I ever been in drag? Let me think. I've worn so many damn costumes at Halloween parties. I can't think of it. No, I've never.
No, showing up as Dr. Frankenfurter at a Halloween party doesn't count.
No, let's see. The craziest thing I ever did was when this friend of mine made this Pope's costume for me, and I went as Pope John Paul Ringo the First or something like that.
That works for me. Hey, Jim, you have a good evening, my friend.
Are you putting me off here?
Yeah, I am. You got them lit up.
Good for them. Well, tell them I said, you know, the answer is for Fox News and some of these other people like Sarah Palin and all these other crazy ass people. Just tell them they're full of shit.
Hear, hear. I think you just told them. Take care, Jim.
Goodbye.
Bye. Jim. The inimitable, irrepressible Jim. Hey, Tracy, are you there?
I think I am. Can you hear me?
I think you are. I think I can.
I think I can. I know I can. Hey, hon. Long time no talk. It's just me, you know, checking in.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I just wanted to say hey, and, you know, I've been kind of hiding. Because I turn on the news and I get really annoyed and I turn it off. And, you know, I heard about those two young men. I saw some of the pictures. So they raped the young lady. They had her dragging her by her feet and her legs.
Yeah.
I mean, her arms. Uh-huh. And they're the only ones that got in trouble, yes?
Right, because they managed to see the coach. Now, as background, Anonymous went through and hacked a whole bunch of folks in Steubenville.
Okay.
And they came up with a lot of documentary evidence. And one of the things that they came up with was apparently the idea that the coach, the football coach of the Steubenville Big Red, had instructed his players to go through and delete everything. Wipe your phones.
Oh! Now, so he was hindering prosecution and obstructing justice.
Right. Well, everywhere but Steubenville.
Oh, oops. Okay, and this is this in Texas by chance?
No, this is Ohio.
Okay.
Oh, no, Ohio gets football crazy as any state in the union does.
Yeah, because there's not much else to do there. So
now stop that. We have Ohio members of the Horn family who might take it.
Love
exception.
Y'all. Love y'all.
Yeah, okay, just as long as you get that in. Yeah, a little bit more of that West Coast bias, Tracy. Yeah, I know how you are.
Well, I know. Because, see, I was passing. I came home briefly to take care of some stuff before I went back to work. And as I was walking through, they had the digitized picture of the two young men carrying her out, you know, almost like they had hogtied her. And I'm going, and at that point I just left the room and just shut myself down because I you know, saw one of the young men weeping and apologizing. And I'm thinking, it's only because are you apologizing because you're truly sorry or because you got caught?
And I think that's a safe assumption. You know, when
you know, because
you know, there was
and they're only getting a year in juvenile.
No,
huh?
at least a year, and in one case, up to 5, and in another case, up to 4. Now, what I thought, you know, the one young man was openly weeping. The fella who had been the quarterback, his name was Trent Mays. He's the one that stood up and said, "I just want to tell everybody that I'm sorry, and there should never have been any photos taken." So I think it's pretty clear he's sorry there were photos taken.
There was photos taken.
Yeah.
Now, after he was a participant in a gang rape.
Yeah.
No, it's just, yeah, so, wow. So, onward and upward, so I've been listening to, you know me, I give tidbits of stuff, and I hear about, you know, our little boy Ryan is up to his old antics, his same old antics about, you know, cutting Medi-Cal and Medicare and all this and all this aid and the sequester. And what tickles me, well, it doesn't tickle me, it makes my head spin. All these people that are so, you know, they're worried about the fetuses.
Yes, the fetuses.
But then, what happens when the fetus comes out?
Yeah, they don't care.
So, okay, so you're going to cut health care. So what happens when the little fetus gets sick?
Then the little fetus will live or die based upon...
You're cutting education. So when the little fetus is... And so, can you still hear me? Did I lose you?
You're breaking up some, but yeah, I get your point. The little fetus is going to be cast into the loving, tender hands of the unseen moving hand of the free market.
Right. And so I listen to all this stuff, and I just sit there and wonder, and I, no, I don't wonder. I just like, wow. They just don't get it. And so that leads me to when I was, again, leaving the house because my girl is a news junkie, and it makes me crazy because she, you know, I'm like, if we're going to watch the news, can we watch something that the news that really matter? You know, but she's hooked on local news. But anyway, as I was walking out, they were talking about the Republican Party, and they're trying to rebrand themselves.
Oh, dear.
To appeal.
Yeah, I know. You're right.
To a wider base. They're going
to. Did you say a wider? Did you say a wider or a whiter base? Because I don't think they can appeal to a whiter base.
No, wider, W-I-D, no H.
Okay. Yeah, and good luck with all of that. Good luck with all of that when your primary spokespeople are Ted Nugent and Hank Williams Jr. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Hey, Tracy, I got a roll, dear. I'm glad we did get to talk, but I want to try to get a couple more calls in this evening. Don't be such a stranger for such a long time, all right? Are you there? See, that's what I was afraid had happened. We had some connection problems. Hopefully we'll have Tracy back another evening soon. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Bob, it's Kath from Canada.
Well, hey, Kath, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Quite well, thanks.
Good.
Except for all of this. I mean.
Oh, I hear you. Listen, I'm a feminist. I work for a feminist organization, and this whole rape case in Steubenville, I couldn't not call.
I understand.
Yeah. So I see we're almost at we're getting close to 9, so I want to put in my 2 cents worth. So my oldest son, Max, is 18.
Okay.
And after we've been hearing this sort of rapist apologist CNN commentary on what's happening, I had to sit down and talk to him tonight. Like, I want to be sure, given all I thought I've done, that he understands that, you know, if there's a young woman at a get-together and she can't walk, it's not okay to do anything to her.
No, and you know, that's... we've had similar conversations around here.
Yeah.
You know, no means no, and silence means no. And everything but yes means no.
Right.
Because if you cannot clearly understand that consent, whatever you're doing, is being manifested, don't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, no means no in the case of giving a ride home.
Right.
No means
absolutely.
No for another trip to the punch bowl. No means no. Do you want to dance? No means no.
Yeah. And it works two ways, too, right?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Based on, you know, the culture, the way that Juanita was describing it, it seems that we have a hard time understanding the no coming from the female perspective than we do from the male.
Right. And I could go on ad nauseum about what fuels that kind of way of thinking. And you touched on it with Jim about when you objectify women it makes it somehow for some people acceptable to do something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's power. It's objectification. I hope to goodness that it's not hardwired into our system, Kath. I mean, is this some sort of cave? Well, no, cavemen. That's not fair because it's quite possibly that possible that some Stone Age societies were actually more advanced than we are with regard to the to gender and roles and division of labor and so forth. So I don't think it's hardwired in culturally or genetically. But the culture, what we're calling, for lack of a better term, the culture of rape, certainly has been hardwired in somehow, somewhere, some way, has it not?
I would agree with that. I mean, the conversation I had with Matt tonight was about, you know, if you have a big, beautiful-looking house and you get robbed, even if you have, like, your home security and all your doors locked, no one says, oh, well, you were robbed because your house looked really good. It'll say it.
No.
The way they say to someone who's raped, well, what were you wearing? Pardon my language, what the fuck does that matter what you're wearing? It doesn't matter. Go.
Right.
Sorry, my little lad. Go
That's
ahead.
Okay. oh, mommy dropped the F-bomb in front of the youngin?
No, he missed that part.
Oh, well, good. Good.
I made notes. I don't often make notes when you speak with your callers, but some things Jim said about, I can't remember exactly what he said, but I just wanted to put some thoughts or some stats into violence against women. I can't speak for the U.S., but in Canada, violence against women in intimate partner relationships, we're talking like it's in the high 80%.
High 80%? Oh, my.
Yeah, so if we talk about, you know, people in an intimate partner relationship, male violence against women compared to female violence against men, like, that tells the tale. Like, we're living in a patriarchal world. We're living in a world where women are objectified in the media over and over and over again. For lots of reasons, I think it made it very easy for these young men. And this is not an excuse for their behavior because they
no,
know.
No, it's an it is an attempt to understand wrong. The culture, is it not?
Yeah, it's rape culture. That's exactly what it is. Victim blaming. Well, what did you do wrong? Well, wait a minute. I walked down the street. I went to a party and had some drinks. You know, the guy could go to the party and have some drinks and not necessarily have to be concerned about, you know, the star football players doing what they, in this case, did. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, you just got a big love it, you go girl from Jim.
Oh, thanks, Jim. This hits home for me. I mean, this is the work that I do. I have two sons. Like, I'm trying to raise them to be thoughtful, considerate young men. And
decent human beings, perhaps?
Exactly, that they are living in a world of male advantage. And understanding what powers that and what fuels that and how they can push back and say, well, you know what? I'm a guy, but I can be a feminist, and here's why. And this is why feminism matters.
What?
Feminism matters for exactly reasons like this case in Steubenville.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, not to get back into Shakespeare's Scottish play or anything, I don't know why any man born of woman is not a feminist. You know, that lets out everybody but, what, Macduff?
Yeah, you know, there's something that happens with our young men, and, I mean, again, this is the work that I do, where, you know, they go, depending upon what the family situation is like, but the imagery in the mainstream media about what being a man looks like. You know, I can't imagine, I mean, women have their own kind of pressure, but I can't imagine what it's like to be under that kind of pressure where you always have to be tough and manly and strong, and yet the emotion you're allowed to demonstrate is such a shallow, shallow pool.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, Kath, we got to have this conversation a little further, maybe another night soon.
Sure.
But it's interesting you bring that up because an analogy just occurred to me because, you know, Jim was talking about drag queens. And,
heard
but,
that.
Okay, so consider this. The narrow range
of emotions that males are permitted may in part be part of the problem.
I couldn't agree more.
And the narrow range that that men are allowed to manifest are similar to the narrow range of clothing that men are allowed to wear. A woman can choose any color of the rainbow for dressy business wear, right?
Yep.
A man has a choice of charcoal, black,
navy blue,
or navy blue. Or if he's really feeling outrageous in the summertime, maybe a blue and white striped seersucker suit, but everybody will look askance at him if he does that.
Yeah.
You know, the narrow range of male emotional responses equates to the fact that, you know, you can have a blue suit, a black suit, or a gray suit, but look at all the, oh, look, you can have a little color with the necktie, but nothing outrageous.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. And this is the kind of work that I do with boys and young men in my actual job.
Well, then you're doing the work of the angels, Kath.
Thanks, Bob. But, to think about you as boys and young men, you're allowed to feel and demonstrate your feelings around more than anger or frustration.
You know, can I throw something out to you that's absolutely superficial, but maybe not so much? There's a trend out there, and I guess it started out among the so-called goths with guys painting their fingernails black.
Yep.
Well, now they've discovered the rest of the color wheel. and there's a little trend out there. And you know what?
Yeah.
More power to you. Go. Do
yeah.
it. You know?
Well, for me, like, I approach my work with the nibble theory, which is that every little nibble off of the issue, eventually if you nibble enough, you're going to make a change, right? So if it starts with, I'm going to paint my nails black, but hey, I'm going to paint my nails purple, I'm going to paint my nails, you know, whatever, that's a good thing.
Yeah. And it's not feminization.
No.
It is the broadening of the experience. I don't even necessarily, yeah. You know, the fact that we have to tie all these things into these, you know, icky gender pigeonholes is, Well, Kath, we have run up against it, but please don't let this be the last one for such a long time.
I won't, Bob.
All right. Bye now.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
And golly Moses. Let's see if we can work in one more call. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Mark. I'll make it quick.
Hey, Mark.
I been listening most of the night. I would just remind the folks that are still listening tonight that there was an average of 19,000 rapes a year in the armed forces of the United States. So remember to thank a soldier. And also, one of the things I learned, having been a Marine and a policeman, is in both lines of work, encountering a rape, and you talked upon it, you mentioned upon it. Use of deadly force is an authorized level of stoppage. So, in any case, it's a sad comment. I grew up in a progressive family with a pro woman outlook. So, and I love my mother. So so you've touched on all the subjects. I just wanted to make another quick comparison. I'll hang up. But the Benghazi thing they keep talking about. I would just remind the listeners also in 1983, prior to the Marines getting killed in Beirut, Lebanon, the 240 Marines, the U.S. Embassy was attacked and there were 17 Americans killed, 7 CIA and, 6, U.S. Marines. And then they blew up the Marines at the barracks and no one on the left said anything disparaging about Reagan, but he did leave. That's why I like listening to your show, because you have people that know justice and push back against racism. And I've never had a gay man try to take
advantage. Hey, Mark, I'm literally 10 seconds away. I got to go, man.
Semper Fi, Bob.
Bye. Mark, calling from Florida. Thanks, everybody.